rated M for mature.
Welcome to the Lost Pages of Norse Myth. I'm Jason Weiser, your narrator and host of the Myths and Legends podcast. Each month, join us here as we reveal a missing page from the Prose Edda, the great book that contains all of Norse myth. It is whispered that these lost pages tell the story of a god from a distant land and his young son as they embark on a perilous journey across the Norse realms. But before we begin, I have an exciting announcement for God of War fans and collectors alike. Sony Interactive Entertainment and Santa Monica Studio have partnered with Loot Crate to create the God of War Limited Edition Crate. It's packed with exclusive collectibles and more to take you deeper into the rich world of God of War. Check it out at Loot Crate's website. Pre-order before May 31st, 2018, and you'll also receive a bonus challenge coin keychain. Supplies are limited, so pre-order today at lootcrate.com/God of War. Restrictions apply. Now back to your regularly scheduled epic adventure. Now, I present to you the ninth lost page, An Eye for an Eye. Dawn was breaking in Asgard, as it had done for 729 mornings past. The sun rose to reveal the realm of the Aesir gods, suffocated by a long, bitter winter. An Asgard huddled and cowering, against a fear only uttered in the most desperate, mead-fueled confessions, that this might not just be a winter, but the winter. The Fimbulwinter. An unrelenting 3-year frost, said to hearken the arrival of Ragnarok. An end to warmth and hope, before the end of the world. It had been almost 2 years since the gods of Asgard saw a sign of spring. With every white new day, they worried that the foretold death of all gods was creeping near. The Aesir knew the manner in which they were going to die. It was the reason they filled their days with fighting, feasting, and drinking. Those were the pleasures of the gods. They meant to enjoy them until the very end. Of course, if this winter lasted any longer, it surely meant that the gods' raucous hedonism had finally come to its final hour. Their fates, they feared, were sealed. As they had done every morning since this great winter had begun, Odin's network of all-seeing ravens circled the skies of the Nine Realms. Their wings carried the Allfather's sight across the entirety of creation. Through them, Odin searched unyieldingly for even the smallest glimmer of hope. At an end to this frozen death march, for proof that this winter was not what they feared, that it was nothing more than an inconvenience. And that morning, he found it, poking through the frozen, cracked soil of Midgard, a single flower. Odin's son, Thor, approached his father's throne. The Aesir yet live, as do the Vanir and the cursed giants. "Finally," said the Allfather, madness shining in his eye, "I can continue my hunt." Spring had come at last, and all Asgard was celebrating, all save their king, who paced furiously in his throne room. The 2-year winter had rattled all the gods, but where most saw the stretch as a false alarm, Odin saw it as a clear warning. Next time, the winter would not yield. The next layer of frost on the green pastures of Asgard could only serve as an entryway for the end of all the Aesir knew. Ragnarok was surely upon them. If he did not act now, it would be too late to stop it. "The giants have retreated to Jotunheim, but they hold the key to our undoing. Of this, I am certain," proclaimed the One-Eyed King to the raven perched atop his shoulder. The bird cocked his head at his master quizzically, as if trying to understand if Odin expected a clever avian retort. Odin scoffed. "To find our salvation, I must find the hole the coward Jotnar have crawled into." Odin knew that this was a feat that even he, with his all-seeing network of ravens, could not accomplish on his own, so he employed the help of the warriors of the realms. Wandering souls, looking for a chance to prove their worth, began to conveniently find their hero's path in the writings Odin himself had scattered across the realms. Of course, Odin hid his involvement in their creation from the travelers, leading to a test of worth. The writings would then reveal the warrior's true calling, to find the legendary lost realm of Jotunheim. They would then live out the rest of their lives scouring the realms for information on the hidden entrance to the land of the giants, sharing whatever they find with their worthy kin via messenger ravens in a language known only to other true travelers. True, it filled their hearts to live a life with purpose. Of course, not a one knew the truth of their purpose, to fuel the obsession of an all-powerful madman. Year after year, Odin's search continued. But no matter how many giants he sent Thor to torture, no matter how many lost warriors he had at his disposal, he still could not glean the location of the missing path to Jotunheim. His madness had grown beyond his control. In his unyielding quest to find Jotunheim, he was destroying the Nine Realms. Mimir, the one who had brokered the deal that had brought peace between the two warring factions of gods years before, stepped up to attempt to quell the violence. The ways of death and destruction weren't succeeding, Mimir argued. Ragnarok will be the end of us all. The Jotnar will feast their last as well. If they know something of the end we do not, let us make peace with them, so they might share this knowledge with us. Odin spat. You sound like Tyr, and you'll remember what I did to him and his precious temple. Mimir did remember. Tyr, the god of law and justice, whose temple in the center of the realms allowed all manner of creature to travel to any of the Nine Realms in but a moment. But when the giants retreated, an enraged Odin led an army of gods and monsters to raise Tyr's temple. On that day, the very symbol of cooperation and peace between the realms became a declaration of war. The message from Odin to the giants was clear. I do not aim to fight you. I aim to erase you. Talk of Tyr angered Odin even more. Tyr was in league with the rotten Jotnar. He spouted talk of shared knowledge too often as well, thinking I did not see his true intentions. He wanted me to invite the giants to sit at my table. Oh yes, great builders, come in. Feast your fill. Please do share your sacred findings out of the goodness of your heart. More likely they would crush me with them. I meant no disrespect, my lord. Mimir started to backtrack, but Odin's rant did not cease. And now here you are, speaking to of peace and cooperation with an enemy that would sooner grind our bones in their teeth. But you know that all too well, eh, Mimir? In fact, being such a friend to the giants, you must know everything. With that, Mimir was momentarily blinded by a flash of light as Odin transformed into a giant silver hawk. He grabbed Mimir with his massive talons, dropping the god high atop the tallest peak in the realm of men. The sight of the last known working bridge to Jotunheim convinced Mimir had betrayed him for the giants. Odin was sure that his once trusted friend knew the secret rune that would unlock this final gate to their realm. The rune. Speak it, Odin commanded. But Mimir could not. He didn't know it. He pleaded with the Allfather for mercy, but the crazed god simply laughed. You'll say it, eventually. Odin raised his hands. At his command, fat, twisting roots rumbled and burrowed the way out from the earth, and rose, twisting around Mimir. The god of knowledge struggled in vain as the earthen shackle snaked and tightened, binding him to a nearby tree. I've never thanked you, Mimir, Odin taunted with false kindness, for the foresight you so generously granted me, and at such a reasonable price. At this, Odin's fingers reached to his eye patch and lifted it, revealing the calloused, empty socket where his right eye used to reside. But still, I wonder, was I charged fairly? Or did your Jotnar masters simply desire proof of my gullible foolishness? Mimir straightened himself on the tree. I swear, I am not hiding this rune from you. I cannot reveal that which I do not know. We shall see. Odin shrugged, raising his hand to show Mimir as it morphed into a razor-sharp talon. You, maybe not as well as you'd like. Odin plunged his talon into Mimir's right eye, stealing it as he felt his had been taken from him. Holding the eye in what was once again a hand, Odin admired it and grimaced when he noticed it was softly glowing. Placing the eye in his pocket, the Allfather turned toward his captive. That's enough for today, he said. We'll try again tomorrow. This will take some time, I'm sure. Luckily for me, I have until the end of the world. The final lost page has been revealed, but Kratos' adventures in this strange Norse land are just beginning. Bring God of War home on April 20th, 2018, and discover Kratos' most epic journey yet for yourself. Don't worry, we're not putting the lost pages back in the vault just yet. Download the God of War Mimir's Vision app and bring the game's cover art to life with the magic of augmented reality, revealing the final chapter of the lost pages of Norse myth. Now, stay tuned for our final interview, an exclusive chat between God of War's director, Corey Barlog, Sonny Sulick, who plays Atreus, and Chris Judge, who plays Kratos.
Hey, Sonny, Chris.
Hola.
We're here. Hey. We're gathering. We're going to take some time, sit down, and just chat about some shit, right? Mostly, we're going to talk about the experience of working on this game. And remember that your checks have not cleared, so you need to say nice things about me. You can say shit about anybody else. I don't care, but just nice stuff about me, like about my hair or about how I dress. These are all suggested topics of you know, flattery.
Oh, nice. I saw something on Twitter. I saw you actually did get a haircut.
I did, yeah. It still looks like I have a beaver on my head most of the time. No, but sincerely, you know, I just wanted to kind of dig in a little bit. When you guys were first brought on this thing, do you have any idea what to expect?
I mean, when I auditioned, I had no clue what was going on. I really thought it was just a movie. That was just, like, quite different, but...
I really like that you said it's just a movie.
No,
games are so much better that it's like, whatever, it's just a movie. Oh, it's a game. Oh, that shit's real.
No, but the game, I got kind of used to it almost, like, right away. It wasn't, like, much of a surprise. I mean, I love the cast and set, especially the director.
Oh, yeah.
It's a nice haircut.
I hear he's super cool.
But,
He works out.
Once Chris got the role, just kind of like went downhill from that point. So,
you thought that too. Wow, that's good.
I mean, I tried to do my best, but I just couldn't make it happen. But I mean,
you just sink to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
I actually had no idea, and it was actually one of my kids who said, "Hey, this really sounds like God of War." So, because you know the
oh, from
audition,
the sides.
Yeah, the audition material was wow. All had a different name on it. You know, it's when I found out that I was moving on in the process and had to do a chemistry test. I actually felt really at home because I have sons who were Sonny was 10 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Who were 10, and I had always kind of longed to go back and spend more time with them when they were 10, and so that kind of fell in my wheelhouse, and Sonny and I like got along just from Jump
yeah,
Street.
Definitely, yeah. Once I the chemistry is, I mean, they're all like a bunch of other like great actors, but he really just stood out, like definitely
because I was the only black one.
No.
You're black? Initially, not really knowing what to expect, immediately sort of adjusting to all of this. What is kind of your impression now? You've been through it all, so your thoughts on actually having been through it?
Well, honestly, the whole process like went so quickly.
Four years.
Yeah. No, it really felt quick.
Really?
Like, honestly. Wow. Like, I feel like it's just, I can't really like explain it, but everything's just like quicker and quicker. I don't know if it's going to be done soon.
Well, you brought young. You were 9, right?
I think I was 8.
You're 8?
Wow.
8 or 9, yeah.
Wow. And you're like, you know, 27 now. So.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So it's amazing how the growth has, but, you know, is it, you imagine it's what you sort of expected it to be? Is it a lot like the other jobs that you've done or?
Well, no, not even close. I didn't know it was going to be that long of a process, but I guess it just went by super quickly. But I definitely remember some like really like interesting and fun moments. But other than that, it was just like that.
Well, you know, no, I was completely unprepared for the process of this. You know, I've said in TV and film, you get to take takes off, which allows you to kind of pace yourself through the day. And in this medium, you don't. You know, you're never at a point where you're not on camera. So,
oh, like, I see what you're saying. So when you're saying takes off, it's like, hey, so and so's close up. So you're
exactly. Yeah. So you go, you know, so you run it, you know, half. You just say your lines with no kind of anything behind them or underneath them.
Yeah.
But in this medium, you can't ever do that because you're always on camera. And I was completely unprepared for how much more tiring it is to be in character for every take.
Yeah. And one take, one camera shot for everything, which, you know, I find out afterwards is actually pretty hard. It's not as simple. I just thought it was fantastically easy because someone else would take care of it until you're taking care of it yourself. And all of a sudden, it's a lot of work, man. But I don't think we could have even done it without you guys. Like this, what you bring to the table. We could have probably done it without Sonny. We could have. And, you know. Well, the tiny Sunny robot we got to replace him, actually, with a firmware update, is going to work out really, really well, right? And never breaks his legs.
Oh, that's right.
You know what I really do remember? When I basically got Chris the role, when I just, like...
Ooh, that's good.
But I mean, it was only my choice. So.
Right? Yeah.
I could have picked anyone else, but right. He has to repay me like this. So,
and I'm very thankful you picked him. Like I was nervous about who we were gonna get.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you took care of it.
Yeah. I think I made the wrong decision, but I mean,
in hindsight, you would have made a different decision.
It was as Sonny let me know several times. It was, you know. He was asked who he got along best with. So to know that your career resurgence was partially hinged upon the decision of a 10-year-old, that was not disconcerting at all.
But in the end, I think it worked out. We've had a lot of people playing the game recently, so we've had a lot of people on the team, but we also had a mock review, which a mock review is kind of a sort of a test screening, I guess. You would, like in the movies, you'll bring a bunch of people in, except it would be like a test screening with a reviewer, and then the reviewer would give you a fake, if you will, review, and then give you an assessment of what they believe the aggregate score will be with all the reviewers, so the Metacritic score, right? And we use this a lot of the times at the tail ends of games to understand how we're going to communicate with the press, but also give us a good understanding several months before the release, whether or not there's anything we can fix, like any easy wins we could fix. Because it's pretty nail-biting to think like 4.5 years of your life is going to be down to this person writing about it. So the review came back, and so there's so many things going on in this thing, right? First and foremost, something that I think you guys should be extremely proud of is... This guy actually had said he's a cynical and sort of jaded reviewer, right? Games don't affect him very much. You know, he doesn't really get caught up in sort of the emotion of games, and he cried at the end.
Wow.
Yeah. He cried at the end, not because he said of a sort of cynical or kind of like sappy, sentimental way, but like an earned emotional sort of moment. So the moment between you two at the end is so powerful when people experience the entire game that it affects them. Like the guys who wrote the strategy guide had the same thing, that he got really embarrassed a little bit because he started crying with his coworkers. They were all like sitting right playing the game for the strategy guide, and he started crying a little bit at the end. Wow. And he was like getting a little uncomfortable because he was doing it amongst coworkers. I was like, don't be uncomfortable. That's awesome. So that's a huge thing.
That's
right?
Awesome.
The sort of casting comments that he had made, the idea that the sort of, and again, it's calling you old, but in a really good way, the weathered sort of age to your voice that just commands this kind of like, this is who Kratos is at this point. And then this idea that you go toe-to-toe, this is how he described it, you go toe-to-toe with every one of Chris's beats. So you guys are, your chemistry... You chose wisely, my son, because your chemistry is wonderful throughout the entire experience. He laughed out loud many times, so it's pretty impressive. I think because a lot of times in games we don't necessarily hit the range of emotions, I think without what you guys had done, we probably would not have been able to do that.
Well, you know, in all honesty, a lot of performance is based on trust. And we did a lot of the emotional stuff pretty early on. And for both, I was really unfamiliar with it, but you gave me the trust factor that, hey, trust me, it'll be, you know. And so I felt comfortable to, because in my I'm old, I'm in my 50s. So my take on video games was that there's not a whole lot of emotion to it, that more the tenor of your voice mattered more than the emotion behind it. And you let me know very early on, and let us play with the chemistry between us. You let us know very early on that it wasn't going to be this one dimensional thing, that it was going to be emotional, and so that really provided a safety net to really go for the emotional beats of the script. So I mean, kudos to you.
No, truly, thank you. I think it's a testament, I think, to the entire group that we had. It did feel like a pretty amazing safe space, if you will, on that mm-hmm. volume, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you guys did some incredible work, sometimes 7 or 8 times in a row. But, like I said, the cross-section of people who have seen this have all kind of said the same thing. They go into it not knowing what to expect, and also wondering whether or not they're going to like these characters, mm-hmm. right? We mm-hmm. knew that challenge coming in. Kratos was a sometimes reviled character mm-hmm. because of his sort of one-dimensionality. Some people are very skeptical about Kratos having a son. Am I going to have to babysit him all the time, mm-hmm. right? But every time, people coming out of this really feeling like, hey, I really like this. Mm-hmm. This, I believe this relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that comes from, I think, the performances, but like, what did you need to do to get into those sort of moments to find the sort of truth, if you will, of those interactions?
Mainly Chris really helped me, just because like the chemistry was just like, we bonded right away. So I guess also like personal, like family stuff, I could express my emotions while I'm acting, which really helped me in like acting world and like personal life as well. So it mainly it was all about Chris, because he just, like, helped me out.
He's a good guy like that.
Well, you know, and just to, on my end, to expound on it, like, for me, it was truly so easy to tap into our relationship, because it was like a chance to have this age over with my own sons. You know, it really was. And at first, it was difficult for me to give in to that, and but once I did, it really, at least for me, it really made the emotional connection between us really, really deep. And once I was okay with how much our personal relationship was affecting me, then I really think that's kind of, for me, when it really went to the next level.
What was the hardest moment during this last 3 or so years?
Well, I don't know how I can put it without really giving it away.
Well, that's all right.
There was a particular...
We'll bleep it out.
There was a particular time when Sonny's character was ill. Hmm. And it paralleled a time when my oldest daughter was ill, and the feeling of helplessness, that you can't do anything, that you know, a doctor will say, do this, and that does or doesn't help. Those are hard. And it wasn't hard to make them emotional. It was hard to not just blabber my way through scenes, because they were so emotionally overwhelming.
What was the hardest moment for you, man?
There was this one moment where I wasn't too sure what the scene was, but I was supposed to just really like starting like to tear up. And somehow I remember you were like helping me out, like, sorry, just like,
just was like this when you had to stab the deer?
Yeah.
Stab yes.
the deer. And you're like, come on, you can do this. Just like cry. And I'm like, cause I was just in like, oh, I'm just acting at this point. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm just acting right now. I just need to like get into like the moment. But I really like, I wasn't really like thinking about it. I wasn't like getting deep in my emotions and wasn't like putting all my effort into it. And I was like, dang, this kind of is like pretty difficult right now. Like, I don't know why I'm not like getting into this. I think it was just like a big crowd, or I don't know what it was, but, and then finally I was just like, I looked at Chris and I was like, all right, like, I'm just going to think of something and I'm really just going to put myself into this situation. And then that, like, once I started tearing up, I was like already, I don't know, it was just like a great feeling just for my acting. Like, I've never experienced something like that, and I guess it really improved my acting. And, like, it was quite hard in the beginning, but I guess with all you guys helping me out, it really helped.
And that's why Colin Farrell has you on speed dial. That's awesome. Oh, that's really good. Yeah. I mean, I feel like we've all grown through this entire process. I feel like you guys have definitely made me better. And I had a very low starting point. So I think at any point, honestly, if you had any effect on me at all, I would go upwards. I would say the hardest thing is actually the way we choose to structure things. It was always getting like 1 or 2 days with you guys here and there instead of let's just shoot for 30 days, right? On a movie, it seems like everybody has it together a little bit better, and we're going to totally improve that next time so that when we have everybody, we're going to really go, I think, for a stretch. Awesome. I did notice when we shot for like 3 or 4 days, by that third day, we really had a good rhythm going.
Yes.
That was really when things started to kick in. And I thought that was, to me, the more fun times.
Yeah, I think I prefer that more, like, just the straight, because you're already in the moment.
Right.
Like, you can, like, go for it every day, and it just gets, like, if anything, you improve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, also, too, it's there's something to be said about the environment and the volume. You know, it was fun every day, and, you know, I've made, you know, no secret of kind of that's how I have preferred to work for the last 10 years is I want to be someplace fun.
Yeah.
I want to be someplace where I wake up in the morning and go, hey, I get to go to work today, you know? And the amount that we laughed on set every day and really enjoyed each other and the company of the great rest of the cast and crew, I really think, and it's always from the top down, you know, and I understand and I'm understanding more and more how much pressure is on you, but you never allowed it to get to you and you never allowed it to bring down the energy nor fun in the room. And that's that you have to know how important that really is, because not once did you ever let it affect you in the volume, affect you when you're dealing with someone, no matter how many times we had to wait for things to get back up to speed or
waiting on the damn camera.
Wait on the camera. but if someone had come in, they would have never known that there was anything going wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I just want to thank you for making it just such a great place to be for the almost, you know, 3.5 years I've been on it.
That's because it's just fun to hang out with everybody there. That's like that.
We had a lot.
Yeah. That is truly is like, I think, the reason that the performances end up where they end up is when people are comfortable, right? Like you're saying, like that idea of safety and sort of comfort. Because I have a very limited acting background, and we're talking like really sadly small. But I had extremely uncomfortable experiences on a set. So I did an episode of this television show in Chicago. It was the Chicago show. So like if you were a small actor of small stature as well as small career, by the way, then you would kind of work on that gig. But like I kind of showed up that day. I was supposed to shoot a gun in the scene, and I'd never really shot a gun before, and they kind of just brought me out in the back and said, fire off your shots, and they're like, okay, you got it, and then they brought me back in, put, like, earplugs in my ears, and then just, like, shoved me on the set. Like, didn't even talk to the director or anything like that, and it was just, like, I couldn't hear action. It was super uncomfortable. It was like the least fun experience I had simply because I felt like the idiot who showed up to school naked and forgot his homework kind of thing. And like I just constantly was just being pointed at like of like, yeah, you're not really getting it, right? And I think they recognized at the end of the day, like, wow, we didn't really help you out on that, did we? And they're like, moving on. Because it seemed like TV, they were, you know, no time. Yeah. You know, they cast it. And I think like 24 hours later, we were on the set. So everything's so freaking fast. So what is the scariest moment you guys have had as performers?
I saw you first.
He was your scariest moment? No, you're saying you want him to answer it first. All right.
God, as a performer, without a doubt, I thought I was going to lose my eye. Just fight scene went wrong and I got hit in the eye and my eye was spurting blood.
Oh.
And, so yeah, thought I was going to lose my eye.
That's pretty scary. that's wow. Okay. Top that, Sunny.
I'm not going to top that, but, I was actually shooting for a scary movie and I get honestly, like, I'm kind of scared of the dark still, and I get scared super easily.
Did you say you're kind of scared of the dark still?
You're scared of the dark, and you like to watch horror movies.
No, I mean, because it's interesting. Is it like a tempt fate thing? I can't help it. I have to watch scary movies. It's just like
it's a compulsion.
In my blood, yeah. But no, there was only like the camera. I wasn't like there was no one in the basement. It's like a creepy, creepy house, and I'm like all by myself, and it smelled like dead people, and it was just like the atmosphere was super like.
Did they make it smell like dead people, or were there actual dead people there?
No, it was just like it was an old, rusty, like big house in like the middle of nowhere, and I was just super like scared just to walk around. I had to do it for like 15 straight minutes, so I was like super.
And then they told you they weren't even actually shooting a movie; they were just punking you. Wow,
I can't really. I bet if I, like, took some time to think about it, but I can't really think of anything. That's only, like, time I was, like...
Do you watch yourself? Like, when you finish something, do you like to watch what you've worked on, or do you avoid it?
I like watching myself, but at the same time, I don't. I hate watching myself because I'm like, oh, I could do this better. Mm-hmm. But then I'm just like, oh, like...
I'm so cute.
No. I only like watching myself after the movie comes out.
Yeah.
Because if I'm watching it like during the process and I'm like, if we just watch playback, I'm like, oh my God, I'm the worst actor. I should just stop. It's like, it's really irritating. But I guess usually the directors are like, oh no, it's fine. It happens to everyone. They feel like that. But I don't know. It's pretty
bad.
They
feel like.
I don't know. I feel like I can always do better. Yeah. And then if I try to do better, it's just like it ends up being worse, so I just have to like let it be.
That's good. That's honestly probably the best sort of self advice you could ever have is don't ever get caught up in any of that. Just be in that moment.
Yep, exactly right. And that feeling never goes away.
No,
never goes.
Do you watch yourself?
Mm-mm.
Have you seen an episode of Stargate?
I just started watching.
You just started watching Stargate?
Yeah.
I just started watching it again as my sort of pre bedtime. Ritual, so I'm still only in the first season, but yeah. So what do you think of it?
It's actually a pretty good show.
I love that.
I mean, because what you know, when you're doing it, you never know. You never you're too close to it. You can't be objective about it, and so then you have to go by what people tell you. But then you don't know what you know. What
you don't know if they're telling the truth or they're just being like, "All right, come on."
So there was a marathon on, I think it was last weekend. And so I caught several episodes besides the one I really wanted to. There's one episode that I did see, Heroes 1 and 2. Those are my favorite episodes. But I watched other episodes and I was like, wow, this is a really good show. Like, you know, something to be proud of.
Yeah, you should be proud. You guys got a few seasons under your belt.
We got a couple.
Good Lord. That's extremely long-running sci-fi series. Mm-hmm. That is amazing. Well, hopefully, this will have a similar effect, and we'll keep doing this for, I guess, in 15 years, we'll have released one other game.
Yeah.
Because every time, the game production cycle doubles.
Yeah.
Right? So, hopefully, the next one doesn't take as long. Not that I'm confirming or denying that we're going to do another one. But I can say that we don't spend 8 hours in a boat in this game.
Oh,
I know, you're really let down. That's right. You know what's funny is that your reaction to the boat actually would be like people believing that the boat's going to be on there because you had to push the boat and ride the boat on the set. How fun was that, right? Talk about the boat shots.
It was a blast.
The only part of this process I didn't like was the boat scenes.
Yeah.
That were actually the audition. Well, not the part of the boat scenes that were the audition pieces weren't the part of the boat stuff.
No, that was the dragging of the boat.
Yes.
Yeah. The other one was the push off of the boat, the rowing of the boat and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. That was interesting.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is just so, it's weird to look back on it that you've been on it almost 4 years. How long have you, when did you first start with the, what was the, when was the genesis of?
I would say June of 2013. So I started thinking about it probably in April or May, and then came over June or July, I can't remember which month, of 2013, and I had the small group, and we had about a year of prep before we thought, hey, we still have another year of pre-production before we get people, and then we just got everybody all at the same time, so it was very fast. So I'd say by the end of this thing, I'll have close to 5 years on this thing. And, you know, in the movie industry or the television industry, people spend 5 years on a project. They still have already done 10 other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like Bear doing the score for this has worked on 9,483 jobs in the time that we've done this. And I've worked on this. So it'll be very satisfying to have it go out there. How do you guys deal with negative criticisms. I'm curious about this just because I'm preparing myself for negative criticism. So I'm curious as to how you guys deal with that.
I haven't really got any, like, criticism yet. I mean, like, when I'm, like, skating, people, like, some people are just like, you're trash. But I'm like...
But it's just, bro, you're trash,
like,
that's all.
I'm skating, like, I'm having fun, but... No, it's pretty cool, like, seeing on Instagram, like, people commenting, like, oh, Atreus, you're Atreus, and I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. But, no, I haven't had any criticism whatsoever.
I will say that I find that I can't not read the reviews.
Really?
I'm obsessed with it. I don't know. It's like a weird, like, masochistic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you, I feel like I have to find all the negative things.
Mm.
And I don't know if it's just self-flagellation, I just need to hear about it, but sometimes I feel like... I want that balance, I think, between players and reviewers, right? I think the reviewers are, to me, a conduit to getting more players, meaning if critics are saying something good or anything at all about what you're working on, it means that you're reaching a wider audience, which is good. Because something that takes this long, I want a lot of people to play it.
Right.
This might be the only thing that I end up doing before I die next week. anyway, so... If somebody asked you to work on a game at this point, would you do another game? Or are you like, no, dude, games are insane?
You want to go first? You've already done one.
Sonny is just sitting back in the chair with a, like, exasperated sigh.
All right. Games are pretty stressful. So, it is... a long process. So maybe if there were just a sequel of this, then maybe I'd accept
it. Wow, look at that. But
if it were any other game,
no.
No, I can't do it. Can't do it.
I'm seriously investing. Yeah. It's like a life choice, really.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, I would never want to move sideways or down. So it's like after being Kratos, where do you go from there? Either you just keep being Kratos or you just don't do any more games.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I wouldn't do, like, as I said, where do you go from there?
Right.
You know,
we have to go even bigger on the
next
one. I don't want to think about that now, though. That sounds like really stressful, and I don't want to work on that right now. So we'll just say we're going to ride the high of being very nearly finished with this thing, this epic adventure that we all went on for several years. And I very much look forward to all of us going out and and enjoying a little bit of the interaction with all the fans.
Yeah,
I think awesome. That's going to be a really good time. Cool. And then traveling around. Maybe we'll go to Norway and embarrass ourselves there in a different language. I like that.
Awesome.
I want us to go to LATAM. There are so many places down in the Latin American territories that are just massive God of War fans. Brazil, you know, like so many interesting and enthusiastic fans all over the place that I think it'd be so fun to.
Well, I've noticed on my Twitter feed there's been a huge uptick in Spanish and Portuguese.
Portuguese, tweets. Yeah. And I think they just announced the localized actor. So the guy who's going to be doing the Spanish and Portuguese language versions. Awesome. And yeah, it's pretty cool.
That would take a long time though, right?
Not really. It's wild. Like, we should have finished a lot sooner than we currently have it finished. But, like, it takes, like, a month or two to take the entirety of the scripts and everything. Because it's all done. They're just really just taking everything. Yeah. Our part is hard because we're coming up with it and then screwing it up and then redoing it and then realizing that was a bad choice and then going back and changing it again. So there's a lot of... It seems like it's long. But if we knew exactly what we wanted, it probably would only take about a month or two. Mm. It's just I don't ever know what I want. That's really what it boils down to. All right, y'all. So this has been a fun little chat that we've had.
Yes.
Yeah. None of it was recorded. This was the rehearsal. But I'm very happy that we got something, you know, out of our system. And now we can do it for real. And you guys can give good answers. That'd be wonderful. All right. Again, thank you for just being amazing, amazing humans, as well as amazing performers. I am very fortunate to have worked with both of you.
Thank you.
And I know what we're doing is going to turn out to be great. And if it's not, it's your fault. And I'll move on.
No, it's not my fault. It's Chris's fault.
Hey, you just took responsibility for casting earlier. So if that doesn't work out, it's on you. I have that recorded. We just recorded that part. Everything else we didn't record. All right, wonderful. And thank you, everyone who is listening to this.